What number is this, Chip?
Episode 27, a salute to Big Boss Radio and the Lost Monkeys 45 from the Monkeys.
Okay, no, I mean, like, don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short. I know.
Zilch. You're listening to Zilch, a Monkeys podcast.
That very cool intro. You know you are listening to Zilch, your Monkeys podcast. Thank you, Michael Lynch, for that. That's always fun to hear that. Melanie, welcome to the show. I'm joined by Melanie Mitchell.
Hi, Ken.
How are you today?
I am just dandy. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I know you guys are preparing for the next episode, episode 28, in which you'll discuss another color cast commentary. What episode will that be?
I believe we're up to Don't Look a Gift Horse in the Mouth.
Man, they're just zooming by. That's fantastic. Today, in monkey history, if you will, as we record this, there is a very cool picture posted by one Andrew Sandoval. Would you like to talk about that photo?
Certainly. He posted it on Facebook this morning with a caption that said, "These people won't leave my hotel room." It's a photo of an impromptu rehearsal apparently taking place in Mr. Sandoval's hotel room for this Friday's debut of the Two Keys show, Peter and Mickey in Indio, California. And Peter and Coco Dolenz are sitting together on a small sofa, and Wayne Avers is off to one side. There's a figure in one corner of the picture that we're seeing from behind. It might be Mickey, but it's a little hard to tell.
Right.
Coco's holding a notebook and a pencil in her lap, and we've been trying to figure out whether that's a set list on the outside of the notebook, but it's too small for us to read, so we're just going to have to wait to find out what it is they're working on.
Well, it doesn't look like the pizza menu from the restaurant down the street, so.
No. And a little bit down the comments thread, Mr. Sandoval posted a postscript. He wrote, "Folk and roll musicians must come down for free continental breakfast."
That's pretty cool. So you ready to jump into the Monkeys mailbag?
Sure.
All right.
P.O. Box 9847.
Our first email comes from Debbie Wright from Australia. And she writes, "Hi, Ken, Craig, Melanie, Jeff, and Sarah." Or, "Hi, Ken and the Zilch crew." That's, I guess, shorthand. So, thank you so much for your great podcast shows. I've downloaded a few Monkeys podcasts from iTunes in the past, but yours are by far the best. Being a first-generation Monkeys fan, I prefer the review shows about the albums and the TV shows. The Headquarters one in particular were classics, but they have all provided me with new information and insights that have been worth listening to. I have a long commute to and from work by public transport, and your podcast helped make the trip much more enjoyable." It's good to go along on the trip with her, right, Melanie?
Certainly. It's a long commute, I think.
Yeah. "I've been enjoying the alternate and live versions of the songs that you've been playing on the shows. I don't know the source of the material. If any of the songs are available for purchase, is it possible to advise where and how they can be obtained, please?" Well, to be honest with you, a lot of that stuff is found on YouTube. And we just kind of rip the audio straight from there. So if anyone's thinking we have this huge vault of monkey goodness, nope, it's pretty much on the YouTubes, right?
It's a wonderful resource.
Yes. She also writes, "I've purchased the Remember CD and the Monkey Super Deluxe Edition CDs after hearing about them on your shows and have not been disappointed." That's excellent. And Rhino Warner, listen to her. People are buying your product because of our show, so that's a cool thing. She goes on to write, "I wanted to tell you that I really enjoyed the most recent Zilch podcast. The one about remembering Davy Jones, as he was my favorite monkey from when they came out in the 60s. I was particularly touched by yours, Ken's, memory of Daydream Believer. Keep up the great work, and thanks for the memories. Regards, Debbie Wright." Thank you for your email.
Wow, that was a marathon.
Yeah.
A very sweet message, too.
Yes, it was a very sweet message. And if you'd like to send us an email, send it to zilchmonkeys, one word, zilchmonkeys@gmail.com. And Melanie, I believe you have an iTunes review for us.
I do indeed. And I had to slow down really carefully to read the headline on this because there's two different ways of interpreting what it says. I'm pretty sure it's a wonderful podcast for a new monkeys fan.
As opposed to a new monkeys fan.
A new monkeys fan.
Yeah. Well, it could be both, but we will take either one of those. So.
True. And it's a message from Jamie McCrimmon, a 5-star rating. Jamie writes, "For a relatively new fan of the monkeys, who only has one friend who likes the monkeys, this podcast is wonderful. Insightful commentary on the band, the music, the TV show, and everything in between. This podcast is like sitting down to listen to friends talk about something you love, and there's nothing better than that. Oh, Jamie, I couldn't agree more. The whole reason that I got into writing was because I wanted to talk to other monkeys fans."
And here you are.
Talking to you, Ken.
And we all monkey around. Life is good.
Uh-huh.
Jamie, you are not alone, and we are glad that you contacted us. And thank you so much for that 5-star rating. We really appreciate all the great reviews.
So, Ken, what in the world is Big Boss Radio?
Well, we're going to describe that a little bit, and I'm going to look at this as kind of like Ken's solo episode. Even though I have Jeff Geringer and the amazing Ghosty Timmers, David Wills, he will be part of the upcoming conversation, and you're going to get to hear me geek out. Because when we grew up with radio, I mean, I remember back in the days of listening to AM radio, because that was the thing back then. You had the Beatles and you had the Monkees and the Stones and so on and so forth. And I had this little red transistor radio, a little red Emerson transistor radio. I'd take that thing in the bathtub with me. I'd take it outside and walk around, you know, ride my bike and stuff like that. And that thing was never far from my side. I always loved music. And it was great to have all the excellent music of the 60s right at my fingertips. So do you have any memories of radio from back then?
Oh, God, yes. I remember taking my radio under the covers at night and slowly turning the dial, trying to pull in stations from as far away as possible. And I'd listen, and they'd get to the end of the song and maybe do a commercial, and I was waiting for the station break where they would do the station identification, and I would know where they were coming from. And sometimes they would mention the city, and I'd get really excited. Sometimes they wouldn't, and I'd be angry. But I could pull in, God, was it Cleveland, Ohio?
W-H-K.
Somewhere in the Midwest. Whoa. It was W-O-W-O.
W-O-W-O.
I have to find out where that was.
I used to listen to W-O-W-O. Fort Wayne, Indiana, that's right. WBZ in Boston, WLS in Chicago. So many great things. So this show is kind of like a salute to that, but we're also looking back at the first Monkees album and what we, the people on our Facebook page, would have picked as the follow-up single to Last Train to Clarksville off the first Monkees album. Good evening, everybody. You're listening to the big sound, the big beat sound of AM radio. I'm Big Daddy Ken. I got the skills to pay the bills. That's right, I'm Ken Mills. I'm the amazing Ken. I'm your number one friend. I'm playing these stacks of wax. I ain't holding back. I'm pumping the wattage into your cottage, bringing you the grooves that's gonna make you smile. All the while, don't you dare touch that dial. Bringing you the best boss sound. Are you picking up what I'm putting down for all you groovy guys and gals? I want to turn you on while you're turning it up on Big Time Boss Jock Radio. How was that? That's pretty silly, huh? Good to see you all. I'm Ken Mills, and today I'm joined by two fine gentlemen, and this is probably going to be one of my favorite episodes because I'm getting to boss jock it today. And if you don't know what being a boss jock is, I'm going to introduce you to two of them. Two men whose shoes I am not fit to tie. Well, let's not go that far. We have Ghosty Timmers, who is also known as David Wills. How are you today, sir?
I am fine, and it's good because I can't tie my own shoes.
Well, that's good. You're getting up in age, and I can help you out, so it works out. Now, Ghosty, you have a show that you do. Would you like to tell people about it?
Sure. It's a show called The Vintage Rockin' Pop Shop. It's on WFDU-FM in the New York, New Jersey area, but anyone can listen online by going to WFDU.FM or going to my Facebook page for the show, which is The Vintage Rockin' Pop Shop. It is the corniest show in radio history.
I personally love this show, and it's great to hear oldies. And when I say oldies, we're not talking about the same 12 songs over and over again. We're talking about real oldies.
Yeah, obscure songs and familiar songs, too, that people will relate to or say, gosh, I don't hear that anymore. Because as we know, oldies now on the radio means music from the mid-80s.
Yeah. How did that happen? I guess the oldies got older with us, so... And we also are joined by Jeff Geringer. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. So nice to hear both your voices.
It's nice Same to you. Hear anyone's. Would you give us your call sign? Or?
Yeah, I program KSPA Radio and KFSD here in Southern California. One is financial news and talk. The other is country. And I learned pretty early in this career that you can't work for the radio station because you like the music.
That's absolutely true.
Continue to work, and it doesn't matter what the format is, as long as it's radio.
There you go. I referred to you guys as boss jocks, and who wants to take on what being a boss jock means? Is you guys familiar with that term, I take it?
Well, certainly out here in Los Angeles, the boss jocks in the 60s were from KHJ Radio. Now, it's hard to imagine, but back in 1966, when the Monkees first appeared on the charts, KHJ Radio had a 70 share.
Now, that's huge.
So 7 out of all 10 people listening to the radio were listening to KHJ. KHJ is the station that did the Last Train to Clarksville promotion, which you've seen videos of online. So they were real in touch with the sound and the era. They all had television shows. They wore Nehru jackets and love beads and had their hair long. And all the girls wanted to be with them, and all the guys wanted to be like them.
Hi, team. We're the Monkees.
Did you tell them about the TV show yet, Mike?
No, man. I was going to sneak it in. You got to be very subtle about these things.
You're going to tell them that we'll be on NBC TV starting September 12th at 7:30 p.m. in colors?
Cool it. What's more fun than a barrel full of monkeys?
Gosh, a Rooney, Mike. I don't know. What is more fun than a barrel full of monkeys?
A train full of monkeys. Dig. KHJ's charted the last train to Clarksville, and they're going to take hundreds of lucky listeners on a trip September the 11th.
Bro.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. The KHJ happening to wrap up the summer of 66.
And us Monkees want to meet you at the station in Clarksville.
Yeah, each of us will give away a color TV set.
So in and out. All you do is send a postcard to Monkey Trip, Box 38130, Hollywood. Starting Tuesday morning, the bus jocks draw a winner every hour, and each winner gets to bring a friend.
Mail your card in and ride with the Monkees.
On the last train to Clarksville.
The last train to Clarksville is happening right now. You're hearing it exclusively on Boss Radio. You would not believe the sight on stage. The Monkees don't just stand up there and sing and play. They have a fantastic light show. They have a rear projection screen with some new innovations in technology never done before by any act. This is truly, ladies and gentlemen, the most fantastic act in show business. I'm seeing it. You are hearing it right here exclusively on KHJ. Boss Jock Robert W. Morgan on the move with the Monkees.
Now, who was the big boss jocks in your part of the country, David?
Well, here we had the mighty trio of WINS, WMCA, and WABC. So we're talking Cousin Brucey, Dan Ingram, of course, Murray the K. WABC was known for a time as WA Beatlesy, because everybody had an exclusive with the Beatles, which meant that no one really had an exclusive.
But they got to say that they did.
So. They got to say that they did.
That was
the
important
Beatles would
thing.
Call into the shows.
Yeah, absolutely. I, of course, was from the Midwest. We had everything from the stations in Cleveland. Then you had the blowtorch of the Midwest, CKLW, out there. And just so many great radio stations, KDKA, and just all the great music that was out there. And we all had our little transistors. And you could pick up New York if you wanted to, especially when the lights went down. And you could pick up Texas if you needed to at some point. The X and things like that. So this show is not just about the Monkees' Lost 45. It's also a look back at the music, and we're kind of framing what would have made a good 45 off this album by looking at the charts that was going, what was going on in the charts at the time, and what kind of music was happening. And it's really quite shocking when you take a look at what was going on back then. As a matter of fact, I'm going to play you guys this clip right now. This is the top 25 songs from 1966. It's just keep getting harder to find.
Baby does a hanky panky.
Winchester Cathedral.
We can work it out.
Strangers in the night.
What becomes of the broken hearted?
One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
Welcome back, baby, to the post side of town.
Can't hurry, love, no, you just have to wait.
Monday, Monday, sometimes it just turns out that way.
Take the last 10 o'clock still and I'll meet you at the station.
96 years.
So listening to that, the top 25, and we're going to have Ghosty do his Casey Kasem imitation now and just read us the top 10 so that you can like put the name with the sound in case it didn't hit you the first time.
More music!
And now the top 10 songs of 1966. At number 10, it's the Mamas and the Papas with California Dreamin'. Our song at number 9 is by that secret agent man, Johnny Rivers. Here's Poor Side of Town.
So welcome back, baby, to the poor side of town.
The best music.
The song at number 8 is about premature ejaculation. Here are the Supremes with You Can't Hurry Love.
Can't hurry love, no, you just have to wait.
The Mamas and the Papas are back again at number 7. With Monday, Monday.
Monday, Monday. Sometimes it just turns out that way.
And now an AT40 extra. This letter comes to us from Stu in Kalamazoo, Michigan. He writes, Dear Casey, the first time I heard Ken Mills' voice, I could have sworn it was Michael Nesmith. I still think he is Michael Nesmith. Is it possible that Michael Nesmith never existed? What the f*** is your problem, Stu?
Boss Hit Found.
We're counting down the top 10 songs of 1966. The song at number 6 is by a group I've never heard of. It's the Monkees with Last Train to Clarksville.
Take the last train to Clarksville and I'll meet you at the station.
Double Golden.
At number 5, a mysterious group called Question Mark and the Mysterians. Something tells me I should have a Scooby snack while listening to 96 Tears.
96 Tears.
The Four Tops are at number 4, appropriately enough, with their song Reach Out, I'll Be There.
The Great American Music Machine.
machine.
The Righteous Brothers have the number 3 most popular record of 1966 with You're My Soul and Inspiration. At number 2, The Association with Cherish.
Cherish is the word I use to describe
Blankie Radio.
And the number 1 song of 1966 is by Sergeant Barry Sadler. Here's The Ballad of the Green Berets.
But only 3 when the Green Berets.
And thank you so much. That was very cool. So, taking a look at what was going on in the charts, we're going to try and figure out what songs would have stood a good chance of competing with the other musical climate that was going on out there. Does that make sense, guys?
Oh, certainly.
I was just going to say, though, you know, listening to that montage, there's such variety in that montage. You know, to go from Winchester Cathedral into, you know, What Becomes of the Brokenhearted, Strangers in the Night, Hanky Panky. Uh-huh. I mean, that level of variety, that much variety, is just absent today. I think a lot of people, when they hear when they make comments about Top 40, they're thinking about how Top 40's been for the past 15 years or so, where every song does kind of sound the same. There's certainly a sound of today, uh-huh. And heavily beat oriented with a lot of autotune. You know, that is the sound of today. But in 1966, the sound of today seemed like it could have been anything.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's different if you take a look at, for example, if someone's going to imitate Taylor Swift. So, for example, if you take Taylor Swift, people might try to replicate her beat and her sound, or anybody that's out there. But the big difference is that back in the 60s, they had something that they don't really use that much today, and it was actual drummers with actual heartbeats, be it the people from the Wrecking Crew or the whatever band that was playing. And it's amazing how much those imperfections made the music of the 60s, the 70s, and the 50s so amazing. You know, any thoughts on that, Ghosty?
Well, it has an organic sound.
Yes.
It sounds like human beings are involved.
Involved.
Now, I mean, that's not to say that there's not, that kind of music made today. I don't think it finds its way into the top 40.
Right.
You know, a lot of it, everything is so regimented and segmented. You know, there's the Heat Seeker chart. You know, if you're into rock and roll, forget the top 40, because you're not going to find any rock and roll there, per se. And maybe that's a big difference, you know, that we really only had one. Well, you had 2 charts, really, or 3. You had your country, your R&B, and your pop. And your pop was usually an amalgamation of all of those.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case anymore, because radio formats are so segmented.
Right.
And everything's so niche programming that you couldn't have that kind of variety. Although it's interesting you bring up Taylor Swift. Her latest song, Shake It Off.
Yes.
And yes, people, I am well aware of that song. I know it well. That song is almost like Taylor Swift looking at other things on the pop charts and trying to imitate those sounds.
Yes, it is.
It doesn't sound like the Taylor Swift of a couple of years ago.
Right. Which was kind of a special thing in itself, and now she's branching out. But this is not the Taylor Swift podcast.
But damn it, it should be.
Talk about something that the Ghostly touched on, and that was the word segmented.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the charts from 1966, it really has a reflection of how we're exposed to a lot of this music. You know, not to sound like, you know, your grandfather, but there were 3 network channels, and if you wanted to see the Rolling Stones, you could get them maybe on Ed Sullivan, but to
right.
get to Ed Sullivan, yep. you mm-hmm. had to sit through Tony Bennett, you know, Topo Gigio and Toadie Fields. And yep. you were exposed to different types of music that kids today, they only know what they're programmed to think.
Mm-hmm.
Where we had much more, I think we had much more freedom.
And no one thought anything was unusual about that.
Right. I mean, I fell in love with the Buddy Rich Big Band from watching them on Ed Sullivan. I never would have saw them, you know, unless I'd watched them. But to be able to see Herman's Hermits and Paul Revere and all these great acts, you had to sit through maybe the middle of the road people, and that's reflected on these charts. I mean, absolutely. Look at the top 20 the week the Last Train to Clarksville hit. Roger Williams' Born Free was on there. And you're going, wait, so a radio station went from Last Train to Clarksville into the instrumental piano of Born Free? I mean, it's crazy to think about.
Absolutely. Well, we put this question to our Facebook page, and we asked people to pick a good 45, something other than Last Train to Clarksville, that could have been a successful follow-up single to Last Train to Clarksville. And I have a few people that chimed in and put this up. They said, Davey Meredith chimed in with, the Monkees theme hit number 2 in Mexico, number 1 in Norway, number 3 in Sweden, number 1 in Australia, number 4 in Japan. Gonna Buy Me a Dog hit number 3 in Mexico. So there was charting potential on the rest of the album. Chad Ledoux says, the truth of the matter is not many LPs had second singles, but if I had to pick one, I would probably go with I Want to Be Free. Now, do you guys feel like Chad does that not many LPs had second singles? Jeff?
No, I can't say that's the truth. I mean, look at the Beatles. I mean, they had certainly more than one single per album, and the Monkees turned their music over so quickly. I think they certainly could have had more than one. Now, I wouldn't have gone to theme from the Monkees, but they certainly have lots of great options on this album.
Mm-hmm. Ghosty?
Well, yeah, there are other big acts that certainly released more than one single off an album. I mean, the Beach Boys come to mind. They would usually do 2 or 3, normally 2, which is kind of what the Monkees did here in a way. Uh-huh. As for theme from the Monkees, I don't know how ahead of ourselves we're getting here. I like to think of theme from the Monkees as a great B-side that the DJs would have turned over and spun, and you would have got a double-sided A out of it.
I agree with that. Got Rob Brancett said, this is an excellent question. The amazing thing is that every one of those songs is worthy of being a follow-up 45. Nathan Cooper says, at this point in time, do you think a single featuring a different lead vocalist may have been confusing to some, i.e. not being recognizable as being the Monkees? When you think about it, the first voice that people heard was Mickey Dolenz. And the first thing that you saw when you saw the starting of the Monkees was Davy Jones. So in a sense, Mickey was the first voice of the Monkees, and Davy was what they were pushing image-wise. They were thinking English when it came to that side of things.
Sure.
Makes perfect sense. But if you look at the charts, Mickey Dolenz had 2 number one singles as lead vocalist. Davy Jones had 2 number one singles as lead vocalist. So to say that Mickey was the lead singer of the Monkees, you know, the charts show it almost as an even tie.
Yeah, absolutely true. Well, let's get into the actual discussion. We had roughly 187 people, and I say that because, well, I'll explain some of our methodology, but we had 2 different votes going on at some point. We did a vote for side 1 and then a vote for side 2, and then we took the winner from each of those sides and had them battle it out. So there were some people who voted in the second round that didn't vote in the first round. So I added up the main votes for the first 2 questions, side 1 and side 2, and it came out to 187. Side 1 had 117 votes just for side 1 alone. And the first song is Theme from the Monkees.
Here we come, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet. Hey, hey, we're the Monkees, and people say we monkey around, but we're too busy singing to put anybody down.
Now, we know that, as Davey Meredith mentioned, that it did chart around the world in other countries. How do you think that it would have done in America, Ghosty?
I think it would have taken off. I think the weekly exposure of that song. I mean, we always talk about how the Monkees or Ray Burt were so bright in repeating Last Train to Clarksville in several different episodes to sort of juice that song up the charts. The Monkees theme was at the very beginning of every single episode. When people talk about the Monkees, the first tune that they start to sing is the Monkees theme.
Yeah.
If you watch any Today Show or any Good Morning America and Mickey's a guest or what have you, you know, they go, hey, remember, hey, hey, we're the Monkees. They always quote that theme. I think Theme from the Monkees. I always like to put myself in you know, the Don Kirshner role. Mm-hmm. and wait to get punched in the face by my kids. or almost punched in the face. But I see, as I said, Theme from the Monkees as something that you would have put on a great B-side. Mm-hmm. It's a little too much maybe to be an A-side. But as a B-side, I think it really would have taken off. You would have had a double A-sided hit. I'll have other thoughts on what the A-side would be. But Theme from the Monkees to me seems like a no-brainer to put on a single.
Jeff?
I can see it as a B-side, but there's also a coolness factor. You know, all the great bands, nobody had a theme song. Now, you can say, okay, they didn't have a TV series. But, you know, there is something to be said. If you've seen the Monkees over the years, I've never seen a reincarnation of the band that performed live the Theme from the Monkees. They walk on to it. They walk off to it. They do the Monkees walk to it. But I've never seen Mickey Dolenz sing the Theme from the Monkees. And I just think there's an anti-coolness about it that must sustain to this day because they've never done it live.
Yeah, it's
had been released as a single, he probably would be doing it live.
Yeah. When you think about it, though, this song is so beloved and so well-known that all a person has to do is go, boom, and you know what you're hearing right away, you know, and that goes for every interview the Monkees have ever had. They'll go, boom, and you just know what that is. It's just such an amazing little musical drop. It's
a reflection of the music or a reflection of the television show?
Both.
and you scared me there for a second because I thought the show was over.
No.
When you did that. Right? But, yeah, and people have brought up, and I think I brought it up once in the Facebook group, that it's similar to Catch Us If You Can.
Yes.
By the Dave Clark Five. And I think that track came out a year before, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they could have gotten away with it without people pointing out that similarity.
And well, here's,
it should have been a thick, you know, just like the blurred lines that Marvin Gaye's going through now. Because it does have a lot of similarities to Catch Us If You Can.
Sure. And you know what? It's even got a little bit of A Hard Day's Night when you think about it. Because A Hard Day's Night is introducing the Beatles as a fun-loving family entertainment entity, you know, that film. And A Hard Day's Night begins with the, boom, you know, that strum guitar chord. Announcing, here they are. And you've got the same thing with Theme from the Monkees. A great opening like that. You know, DJs could have had a lot of fun with that back in 1966.
Absolutely. That's a great call. I never picked up on that, but you are absolutely right. Well, here's a little bit of Dave Clark Five's famous Catch Us If You Can.
Here they come again. Mm-hmm. Catch us if you can. Mm-hmm. Time to get a move on. Mm-hmm. We were young with all of our might. Catch us if you can. 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 Now we gotta run.
Here we come again. I'm just singing.
Yeah, and you can see where Boyce and Hart kind of took that and springboard into this. So it's definitely one of the most recognizable songs in musical history. And this song, out of the 117 votes for side one, only two people picked this as their choice for a single. One of those people being Melinda Flowers Gildart, who said, "The logical choice to me would be the theme song, but I Want to Be Free would have slotted in nicely." So even there, she was hedging her bets a little bit. Well, let's move up to our next track. Saturday's Child by David Gates.
So I'm in love with Saturday's Child.
Every time you take her out at night, you want to kiss and hold her way up tight. You can tell the future's looking bright.
This one got a whopping 37 votes out of the 117. Carol Berg Cohen says, "I pick Saturday's Child, but if I had two votes, the other would be Papa Jean's Blues." See, everybody's trying to hedge their bets and get an extra.
Of course. So was I.
Yeah.
Theme from the Monkees is a great B-side.
Jeff Gehringer, your thoughts on Saturday's Child?
I think it's an okay album track. I never really thought of it as a single. To me, the melody wasn't strong enough, and I'm a huge David Gates fan to this day. It was just an okay song.
To me, as much as I love this song, and this is one of my favorite songs off the album, to me it just sounds like an album cut. It sounds like an incredible album cut.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it would really make a single, maybe if it was a cleaner recording.
Yeah, there is a bit of a muddiness to this track, which is kind of strange.
It would have been nice for David Gates. I mean, only 3 years before that, he was recording Okie Surfer on the Delphi label and making novelty records. So that would have been a nice feather in his cap to have a single. But his personal well-being is really not my concern. So no, I'm going to say I think it's better off as a great album cut. Something you have the singles and you think they're great, then you get the album and you go, wow, there's even more great stuff on it than, you know, the two songs I heard on the radio.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Our next track is I Wanna Be Free, which got 14 votes. So not as many as Saturday's Child, but it seemed like people were more confident in their choice of I Wanna Be Free.
I wanna be free. Don't say you love me, say you like me. But when I need you beside me.
Randall Buey says, to capitalize on the British member, this was about 2 years away from the full-blown Beatlemania. The next logical single should have been sung by the man from Manchester. And J.D. McClutchin said, I Wanna Be Free is the obvious choice. It was released as a single in many other countries. It was a mm-hmm. singles market. But what sold the best were the LPs. Their first two LPs were number one for 31 straight weeks. And Wendy Matheny says, me too. I love I Wanna Be Free. So, Ghosty, your thoughts on I Want to Be Free?
Well, you know, technically this was released as a single in other parts of the world, mm-hmm. and it was a hit. So I think the proof is in the pudding that this really should have been the follow-up single to Last Train to Clarksville. It's almost like the Monkees' Yesterday, in a way.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And obviously Davey, he's the heartthrob of the show. To me, that's another one that seems like a no-brainer. My single would be I Want to Be Free. I know in Australia it was I Want to Be Free on the A side, and an early version of You Just May Be the One is the B side.
Mm-hmm.
I would have done I Want to Be Free with Theme from the Monkees as the B side, and just sat back and watched that thing explode on radio. Now, as DJs would say, you know, here's something, a little something for the ladies, and played I Want to Be Free, and now for the rest of you, boom, here we come. I would count the money after that. I would just sit back and count the money.
So if you were Donnie Kirshner, that's what
Donnie
you
Donnie Kirshner, I'd be going out and buying a new car and saying, God bless you, Davy Jones, for making this possible, which I'm sure he did.
Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned about the heartthrob. I remember when the first time you and I met that you were kind of disappointed because you thought that the original heartthrob of the Monkees was Mr. Schneider, and it took you a couple episodes to realize that he was not actually one of the Monkees, which was
He has so much charisma,
right? Very wooden in his persona. Jeff Garinger.
People are listening to this going, okay, really? Thanks for putting that out there. I want people to comment on Facebook. You really thought Mr. Schneider?
No, I
meant Schneider from One Day at a Time.
Oh, there, yeah. That
yeah, I thought
Schneider.
He was a monkey at one time.
No, we're just monkeying around. So, Jeff Garinger, your thoughts on I Want to Be Free?
Well, I find this interesting because Ghostly, you and I have not talked about it. My selection for the next single, again, would have been I Want to Be Free.
Ah.
For a couple reasons. One, it's a great song. You know, Tommy and Bobby did a great job on it. It was covered more than any other song in the Monkees catalog.
Yep.
You get versions of I Want to Be Free by Andy Williams, The Letterman, Jimmy Rogers, Floyd Kramer. I mean, it's a great song. Davey was the heartthrob at that time. And I think of it really, as you mentioned before, the Monkees' Yesterday. I mean, there's no chance that they weren't definitely trying to copy the success of Yesterday with that tune. But Davey does a beautiful job on it. I don't really like the up-tempo version that they used in the pilot. I think it's so much more dramatic in the small acoustic way that Davey does it. And I think it would have been a nice, knowing what was the following single, which was I'm a Believer, it would have been a nice little kickstand to go back to Mickey's vocals for I'm a Believer.
Mm. So would you have then either done this as an A-side backed with Theme from the Monkees, or perhaps the electric version of I Want to Be Free. Which would get your vote out of those two? Ghost, you go first.
I think the version of I Want to Be Free that's on this album, I think, should have been the A-side of the second single. As I said, Theme from the Monkees is the B-side. I would have put the up-tempo version on the album as sort of a little added extra incentive. Uh-huh. You know, it's like you'd get the single, and then you'd get the album expecting to hear the single. Well, maybe that would tick people off.
Yeah.
But it certainly happened before.
Yeah.
And you would get this cool other version. I like the up-tempo version. To me, it's very Birds sounding.
Yeah, it reminds me of Dylan. With
yeah,
the organ.
With that organ.
The organ definitely yeah. sounds very Dylan-esque. Jeff Geringer, your thought on those combinations?
Well, see, I would have made the flip side. I would have made it an entire debut single.
Mm.
And then this just doesn't seem to be my day as the flip side. And, you know, when we start getting into flip sides, there's a lot of politicking that goes on to what's going to be a B-side.
Right.
The yeah.
Is, you know, whoever has the B-side of Clarksville, which was Goffin and King, got as much money for their B-side recording as Tommy and Bobby got for Last Train to Clarksville. So it was sold as a single with equal money to each side. So a lot of times, I think Kirshner would promise songwriters, hey, you know, give me I'm a Believer, like he said to Neil Diamond, and I'll give you the next single after that, which is what he did for A Little Bit Me. There's so much politicking going on between, and I'm sure the Brill Building was just everyone wanted to get on a Monkees record.
And, you know, I'm really glad you mentioned that, because think about every band that you love. Think about who gets the B-singles. A lot of the times they're just trying to keep everybody one big, happy family.
Pull the Carpenters library up. Every flip side of a Carpenters single was written by Richard Carpenter.
That's true. That's true.
And, there's a great story that Davey told about Mike, that one day he rolled up in this beautiful Cadillac. And they all went, how'd you get, you know, we all get paid the same amount of money. How'd you afford a Cadillac? He says, I write the song, son.
By the way, Carpenter's cast, coming soon. Make sure to listen. Hey, I may not even be kidding. Someone will run with that.
Yeah, someone. I'll tell you what, if you do a Carpenter's podcast, we will promote it here on Zilch. So there you go.
I'll tell you, I've been trying to interview Richard for 10 years, man, and he's just holed up in his house in Thousand Oaks and just wants nothing to do with this any longer.
He's still counting his money, though, so.
Yeah, he is.
And his cars.
Yeah. Well, our next track, Tomorrow's Gonna Be Another Day, only got 6 votes out of the 117 from side one.
Tomorrow's gonna be, tomorrow's gonna be, tomorrow's gonna be another day. Yeah, yeah. Hey, hey, hey.
Nikki Locke said, Tomorrow's Gonna Be Another Day. It may have charted due to its bubblegumminess. Yes, I wrote that. So what do you think of the bubblegumminess, Jeff Geringer, of Tomorrow's Gonna Be Another Day?
Well, see, I like bubblegum. I have to say, I like overly produced records. I love hook lines. And that's what this is. It's a nice album cut with a great hook. And I think Mickey does a great job on the vocals on it. But yeah, as far as it being a single or anything close to it, I just don't see it happening.
Ghosty?
The opening to this sounds a little too much like Last Train to Clarksville for me. And I feel that had this been a single following up on that, people would have heard it and said, oh, these guys are a one-trick pony. You know, it's like the ultimate fake out. If you turned it on and you know, if you didn't know better, you'd think Last Train to Clarksville was coming, and you'd get something kind of similar, an album cut. I don't really think of it as a single. Uh-huh. So the answer is no. You're wrong, people.
Now,
my word is law.
Ghosty's word is law.
Yeah, don't mess with him.
Don't mess with him. Now, the one song that got the most amount of votes out of the 117 votes on side one was Papa Jean's Blues with a whopping 50 votes.
No heartaches felt, no longer lonely. Nights of waiting finally won me happiness that's all rolled up in you. And now with you as inspiration, I look toward a destination sunny, bright, that once before was blue. I have no more than I did before, but now I've got all that I need. For I love you and I know you love me.
Marsha Martin wrote Papa Jean's Blues because of Mickey's harmonies. So Ghosty, give us your thoughts on Papa Jean's Blues.
Papa Jean's Blues is my favorite cut on the album. I've always loved this song, and I think realistically, had there been a proper U.S. second single from the Monkees album, Papa Jean's Blues probably would have been the B-side, you know, if Mike had anything to say about it. Because wasn't that the way the situation started to become, where Mike would get the B-sides, as we just mentioned? I don't think of this as an A-side, though. As much as I love the song, I almost feel like you'd have to... God, now I know what Don Kirshner felt like. I almost feel like you'd have to have either Mickey or Davison on an A.
We've talked about, like, for example, the theme from the Monkees, Here We Come Again. There is a song by Ricky Nelson that sounds a lot like this musically and thematically, wouldn't you say?
Oh, like Hello Mary Lou?
Fools Rush In.
Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. And so I come to you, my love, my heart above my head.
Oh, okay. I was thinking more because Hello Mary Lou has that chugga 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 chugga.
Yeah. So it's not a sound that was not unheard of, if you will, but it does have somewhat of a similarity to what Ricky Nelson was doing. Jeff Geringer, your thoughts on Papa Jean's Blues?
Well, not to throw wood on the fire, my experience with Papa Jean's Blues has just grown in the 50 years that I've been following this band. And it's really at a high now because they did such a great job on the reunion tour the last couple of years of performing it. And I really, really liked it. Uh-huh. I don't believe it could ever have been a single for two reasons. One, if you look at the charts in 1966 in December, and you know, around that era, October, November, December, there's nothing close to a country record on the charts. Uh-huh. It was before Glenn Campbell kind of opened the door. It was before Jeannie C. Riley.
Buck Owens.
It's a beautiful song, but there, you know, to be the founder of or father of country rock, it was too early and not the time. And number two, and this is a problem that Mike has with a lot of his recordings, the title of the song is nowhere in the lyrics. Uh-huh. Never hear Mike sing Papa Jean's Blues. So from an association standpoint, somebody walks into a record store and says, I want to get that new Monkees record. Well, what's it called?
For I Love You and I Know You Love Me.
Right. Daydream Believer. Yeah. I'm a Believer. He did that so many times where he had no title in the lyrics. Uh-huh. And I think this would have been a big problem if it was a second single.
Which was always a big problem of like Led Zeppelin. You know, you're talking Led Zeppelin music to people. And nobody can figure out the name of the song.
Right.
So everybody's like, you know, it's the one that goes, da-da-da, da-da-da, da-da-da.
Yeah, it's like, and especially it's funny when you're speaking to someone who really doesn't know the music but pretends they do. And if you say, oh, yeah, I love Led Zeppelin's Misty Mountain Hop. And they go, oh, yeah, Misty Mountain Hop. Oh, no, it's not mentioned in the song at all. You fool.
Oh, my. Well, our next song with 8 votes.
This is entertaining to people, but we're having a hell of a good time.
Yeah, we're having fun. Hopefully you're having fun, too. out of the 117 votes, Take a Giant Step gets 8.
Come with me, leave yesterday behind, and take a giant step outside your mind.
And here we have Davey Meredith says Take a Giant Step is the B-side of Clarksville. So
that
he lets
is.
Us know that. Bootsy Bass says Take a Giant Step, my all-time favorite Monkees song. It has everything. Jonathan Daskell says, I picked Take a Giant Step because nobody had picked it yet. I always root for the underdog. Aside from that, from a musical standpoint, I think it's a great song and very different from Clarksville. As much as I love Papa Jean's Blues, I think it was a bit too countrified to release as a single at that time. Jeff Geringer, what are your thoughts on Take a Giant Step?
Well, I think it's a great tune. And in fact, if all the playing field was even and it hadn't been the B-side of Clarksville, you could make a darn good argument to make that the single. I think it's a really good song. The hook is there. The lyrics have a positive thing that could appeal to an 8-year-old. And the production I think they did on it was just great. But, you know, all things considered, they put it as the B-side of Clarksville. And that really kind of takes it out of contention. And I think as far as the voting goes, people know that and weren't going to vote for that as the next single.
True. And it's hard to hear this sometimes without seeing Mr. Clean. Ghosty, your thoughts on Take a Giant Step?
Well, I love this song too, and I always thought it was odd that this was on the Then and Now Best of the Monkees compilation, because it was a B-side,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't really think of it as being well-known. But then again, you know, Last Train to Clarksville, the single, sold in the millions, so probably people were more exposed to Take a Giant Step than I was giving them credit for.
Uh-huh.
I love this cut. I also feel like maybe if it was a cleaner recording, you know, some of these cuts are a little muddy. This
right.
is one of them. If it had been an A-side, it would have shown a little bit of the psychedelia that the Monkees would eventually get into, because there's uh-huh. kind of a psychedelic sound to this.
Yeah, it reminds me of Green Tambourine.
Yeah, and it's forward thinking.
Right.
Yeah, I could see that maybe a third single from the album. I really like I Want to Be Free as the follow-up. But I will say, just getting back to something about Papa Jean's Blues, because it just popped into my head, had that been released as a single and been a hit, that would have ended the argument of who was the father of country rock.
Right, absolutely. Let's take a look at what the Beatles had done at this point. Rubber Soul had already come out, so I think that you're seeing some of that influence here in Take a Giant Step, don't you?
I hate to really compare the Beatles to the Monkees, because I think a lot of the Monkees' recordings were kind of knee-jerk to what the Beatles were already doing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Ghosty, your thoughts?
Certainly that progressive kind of music, as exemplified by Rubber Soul, was in the air.
Right.
And had crossed over and become popular music. And obviously the Monkees are taking their cue from a lot of that. I don't know, but there's very traditional stuff on Rubber Soul too, like Girl is a very mm-hmm. traditional song. Michelle, you
right.
know, is a traditional pop song in a way. I think the climate was there that Take a Giant Step could have been appreciated as an A-side because of what was happening in music. But so could I Want to Be Free, because so much was happening in music in 1966.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the Beatles and everything, and it seems like the Monkees and the producers of the Monkees, Don Kirshner, everybody, had to take into account that at this point the Beatles were kind of shifting from being the lovable mop top and the innocent guys to the more introspective stuff. So this was kind of like the producers of the Monkees, be it Don Kirshner or the Schneider and Rafelson, they were kind of trying to fill that void of maybe the next generation of kids that were coming out, the next couple years worth of kids. Does that make sense?
Well, sure, because the little sisters that you know, that the kids had that grew up with the Beatles now wanted something they had of their own, and it was the Monkees.
Right. Ghosty, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and the Beatles appreciated that. You know, when asked about the pandemonium surrounding Beatlemania, John Lennon said, well, we've left that to the Monkees. You know, the Beatles, to their credit, they passed the baton, and they really didn't have to. You know, they willingly passed that baton, and became cheerleaders for the Monkees in a sense.
Yeah, they seemed to be the biggest backers of the Monkees. Even when people were slagging the Monkees, they always seemed to, you know, contest them when asked about it.
Yeah,
it
was
between
the Monkees and the Beatles, it wasn't the members themselves. It was the press trying to, you know, sell papers.
Right.
Sure, and when the Monkees went over to Great Britain to tour in 67, they were brought over there by, or the tour organizer was NEMS, Brian Epstein's company.
Uh-huh.
So there's even more of a connection.
Yeah, so it all works out. Well, let's get up and flip those. This is probably the most exercise we'll have all day. Let's get up and flip the album over. There we go. And our first track on side two is This Just Doesn't Seem to Be My Day. Got a whole 9 votes.
This just doesn't seem to be my day.
Dave Openlinger, I hope I'm saying that right, says, this is a tough one, but I'd have to give the nod to This Just Doesn't Seem to Be My Day. Loved Gonna Buy Me a Dog, though, so hedging his bets there. Daniel Sam says, I'm going against the grain and am voting for This Just Doesn't Seem to Be My Day. It is cool. Melinda Flowers Gildart says, This Doesn't Seem to Be My Day is the most marketable. Mm-hmm. So, Ghosty, is it the most marketable?
You know, about 5 minutes ago, I would have said no. But to me, the more I think about it, this is almost like a Herman's Hermits number.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you think of Herman's Hermits and I'm Henry VIII and there's a kind of hush. And, well, that's kind of a sophisticated Herman's Hermits tune. But they had these sort of, you know, I can't explain it, but you know, jolly ho, we're English, isn't it grand?
Mm-hmm.
Music hall type of songs, and This Just Doesn't Seem to Be My Day is this bouncy number. I personally would not release it as a single had I been in control, but I can see where some of that thought is coming from. And to me, you know, had this been a Herman's Hermit single, I would probably be thinking, well, of course it was a big hit, you know. For the Monkees, to me, it just doesn't seem right as an A-side. Maybe a B.
Jeff Geringer.
Yeah, I'm right with you. As I mentioned before, it would have been my B-side to I Want to Be Free as a single. It is a cutesy kind of song. A little, I don't know what the right word is, but, you know, Davey tends to sing some of the really poppy songs. And while I like poppy songs, sometimes it's just a little too sweet. I get a kick out of now. They run this song as a video montage at Dodger Stadium to show errors and terrible plays by people, and they play It Just Doesn't Seem to Be My Day behind it.
That is so,
so
cool.
It has a life of its own, but yeah, I wouldn't make it a single.
Yeah, this is one of those songs I love. Now, the next two songs for me seem so 1964, 1965 early, and they almost seem like the oldie songs on this album, if you will, even when the album came out. The first track is Craig Cohen's favorite song on a dance party mix, Let's Dance On.
Let's dance on, oh baby, come on. Let's dance on till the dawn, have fun till the music's all gone.
And only 5 people voted for this. One of them was Craig Cohen, who wrote All Day, Every Day. Phoenix Phil says, I don't think any of them, great as they are, have the certain quality that a follow-up single would need. However, I choose Unfairly Maligned by Zilch Garage Band, Rave Up, Let's Dance On. It's got great energy and a real sense of celebration and effervescence, which I love that word. So, Jeff Geringer, your thoughts on Let's Dance On?
I'm sorry to criticize Mr. Cohen because I enjoy his work. But to me, Let's Dance On is really just a soundtrack of the TV show. As a standalone song, it's really just kind of average to me. But when you put it in the context of the TV show and whatever's going on at the time, it was a perfect fodder while the guys did their romps around. So as a soundtrack, it's great. As a standalone record, I'd pass.
Ghosty.
Craig, I'm going to be in your corner. I don't think it should have been released as an A-side to a single, but I think with what was happening musically with songs like Hanky Panky by Tommy James and the Shondells being released and the Garage Band surge that was happening in 66 that was going for this sort of simpler, more rocky party music. Let's Dance On, you know, could have been a frat house anthem.
Absolutely.
The problem I have with it is that it's so similar to Good Lovin' by the Young Rascals, which came out in February of that year, and I would only assume that people would have pointed that out.
Which was in our top 25 songs of the year at number 17. So
yeah, you could have sung Good Lovin' on top of Let's Dance On. So for that reason, I don't think it should have been a single. I like it more than most, so it's me and Craig on that one.
Well, I'll say this much. First off, if Craig Cohn is having a party and you hear Let's Dance On, you know it's going to be a good party and all are invited. So, you know.
And if his parties are all day, every day,
that's
you'll
right.
never be late.
That's right. It's always party time with Craig Cohn.
Right.
But he also loves Listen to the Band. I think that's his favorite Monkey song. But I think that he, you know, as far as party music, Let's Dance On is where he starts. So, no matter what we say about any of these songs, I cannot imagine this album without them. I think we all agree
True.
On that. Let's move on to I'll Be True to You, which got one vote.
But I'll be true, yes, I'll do you. Yes, I will. Yes, I will. Yes, I will.
Out of all these votes, one person voted for I'll Be True to You, and that was Mr. Dan Jones. He's the only person that picked that track, so God bless you, Dan Jones. Now we're going to talk about the marketability of I'll Be True to You. Go see your lead on this one.
The Hollies version came out in 1964. So I could see the powers that be saying, well, this is a good album cut, but this song was already released as a single by another group and it flopped, so maybe we shouldn't go for it. However, it's a Davey ballad, and Davey was the heartthrob, and he was dominating the teen magazines. Uh-huh. And to me, this just sounds like Money in the Bank, if I can be completely cold about it. And I would have put, if for some unforeseen reason I Want to Be Free couldn't be the second single, I would have made it I'll Be True to You.
Excellent. Jeff Geringer, your thoughts on I'll Be True to You?
I've always kind of considered this to be the Brainwash song. You know, I just imagine 8-year-old girls clutching that first album as Davey goes, I'll be true to you. Yes, I will. What you have, I'll fulfill. And it just, well, where can they go buy the Monkey Shades? Or where can they go, you know, to me it was just like grab their audience, and I think they did an excellent, excellent job to it. But it's kind of a little creepy today.
And everybody could use their monkey puppet dolls.
All right, that's enough. I don't know where this is going. I thought you had a clean show. Or maybe I'm the one there with the dirty line. But anyway.
Excellent. Well, the next song that got the most amount of votes on this side, on side two, was Sweet Young Thing with 47 votes.
And it's love you bring, with dreams of bluer skies, and the morning sings when I see it in your eyes, sweet young thing. Sweet young thing.
So, this one seemed to get people's attention. Jeff Geringer, your thoughts on Sweet Young Thing as a 45.
First of all, the production of it is great. They had the Wrecking Crew as part of it. So they had, you know, Glenn Campbell and Bob West and Hal Blaine, Frank DeVito. I mean, they had an amazing list of performers that contributed to that record. Plus, it's my understanding that Nez wasn't really quite comfortable with his songwriting and grabbed Carole King in, which is why she shares the credit with it, to kind of help him with the tune. It kind of has an Incense and Peppermints kind of sound to it to me. It's real full, real big, not really psychedelic-y, but a nice production, but certainly not like anything that was on the charts in 1966. So a great album cut, great live cut, but I wouldn't have made it a single.
Ghosty Timmer.
Well, I still have this image of the monkey puppet in my head. Hold on, let me just get rid of that. Okay. For Sweet Young Thing. I love this cut. I especially love the more recent live versions that the group has been doing. I really love the slowed down, almost Oh Brother Where Art Thou version that they've been doing. As a single, it's a great single by Love or a group like that. For some reason, it doesn't feel appropriate as a Monkees single. And I guess I'm going to be the villain of this particular podcast because I think I'm aligning here with Don. I'm channeling Donnie Kirshner. I can't see that really as an A-side. As much as I love the song and think it's cool, I could see it as the A-side for a cool psychedelic San Francisco band just starting out, or Los Angeles band in the case of both Love and the Monkees, but maybe not an A-side of a show that's, you know, got a sponsorship with Kellogg's, and I don't know, for some reason it just doesn't ring right with me.
Uh-huh. Karen Welsh says her pick is Sweet Young Thing, and Darcy Thompson says, at the time, Sweet Young Thing would not have done great commercially. In my opinion, I love the song, but it wasn't until I was much older that I started to appreciate Nesmith's songs. I don't think the kids in 1960s would have bought it as a single. It just doesn't have, quote-unquote, the monkey style that was selling then. So she kind of agrees with you, Ghosty.
Not only does she agree with me, she just expressed herself much more eloquently than I did.
Maybe she's a boss jock.
She should be.
There you go.
Especially with Darcy. That's a cool-ass first name there.
Yep. Our next track, Gonna Buy Me a Dog, got a whopping 5 votes.
I'm gonna buy me a dog.
A dog.
A dog.
Why?
Because I need
all the friends.
Melanie Mitchell voted for Gonna Buy Me a Dog because novelty songs make fun singles. And Jamie Lee Prada says, I just have a soft spot for Gonna Buy Me a Dog. For some reason, it's one of the ones I remember with the puppy romp from when I saw it as a 5 or 6 year old. Plus the antics on it are just hilarious. My favorite part is Davey saying, you want to read that part, Ghosty?
You can't train a dog. You can only train elephants.
There you go.
By the way, that sounded more like one of the Snap, Crackle, and Pop guys.
But... That's okay. Well, that all fits because they were wearing Mike's hat, so...
Right. And they're promoting Kellogg's.
So. Yeah. I always thought it was weird when you'd, like, see someone in the movie theater's got the stocking cap on, and it's summer, and they go, why are they doing that? I go, they're either doing it as an homage to Michael Nesmith or Snap, Crackle, and Pop, so there you go.
Do you ever wonder if maybe Raybert were fans of Archie Comics and saw Jughead as the tall, lanky guy and, you know, always wearing that crown and thought maybe... Or did Mike bring that to the table? Was that already a part of... Because I think in the audition he's wearing that.
Yeah, he walked in with it and then the poor guy got stuck with that, you know.
Well, the pilot, you know, they called him Wool Hat.
Yeah. I remember when I first talked to Marty Ross from the New Monkees, and he said that he made a joke when he said hobbies and he wrote kilt wearing. And they went out and had like 12 kilts made for him. And he had to wear it in photo shoots in 16 magazine and stuff like that. So be careful what you take to the audition or put down in the little interest cards, if you will.
Yeah, so, not everybody's Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Exactly.
But they should be.
That's a shout out to Davey Meredith. We know that you love Roddy Roddy Piper. Jeff Gehringer, your thoughts on Gonna Buy Me a Dog?
Well, you know, to me, it works on two levels. The first level is just like when they put the screen tests in front of the Monkees episodes, you know, to try to get people to know who they were personally and as characters. Mm-hmm. I think that's what Gonna Buy Me a Dog does. It just lets Davey and Mickey just be themselves and be crazy. And I think it allowed them to really show their personalities. I had a funny thing with this song. I went to a extension class at UCLA. It was the history of rock and roll. And the professor was one of those erudite, elitist, you know, rock and roll didn't come from Elvis. It came from, you know, all these different things. And when he got to the Monkees, to explain the Monkees, he played Gonna Buy Me a Dog. And I thought, well, you idiot. This isn't what the Monkees are. And I got ticked off with him. And, you know, I said, what about Pleasant Valley Sunday? What about I'm a Believer? I said, playing I'm Gonna Buy Me a Dog to showcase the Monkees is like playing You Know My Name by the Beatles to showcase them. Now, either of you know my name?
Of course,
oh,
yeah.
Absolutely.
It's like a Monty Python bit. If you were going to use You Know My Name to explain the Beatles, that's not fair. And it's not fair to categorize Gonna Buy Me a Dog as what the Monkees did best. It was a great way for their personalities to come through and for the audience to fall in love with them, as opposed to on television, on record.
And Ghosty, your thoughts on Gonna Buy Me a Dog?
When you hear a lot of these songs, like Saturday's Child, Papa Jean's Blues, and when you hear pop records in general, when you're listening to the songs, you're always envisioning the group playing along all in unison. Even though we know that's not true. You know, we know that the Beatles would, you know, they'd record the backing track and then they would overdub their lead vocals. But when you were listening to a record, you would just sort of fantasize that, you know, somebody went 1, 2, 3, and then they just go right into the song. Uh-huh. With Gonna Buy Me a Dog, you can't fantasize that because it's obviously two guys goofing on top of a backing track. And I agree that it's a great album closer in the sense that, and that's a great comparison to make to the screen tests, because we get at least the personalities of two of the Monkees. Uh-huh. at the end. But as a single, I just feel like it sounds too disjointed. It just sounds like a vocal session on top of a track. I mean, I know that's the joke of it. You know, it was something that didn't come off, and that's what they wound up keeping. But I don't know how marketable that would be or how funny it would be, you know, once every 45 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to throw it out the window.
But then again, They're Coming to Take Me Away, I think, got up to number 8 on the singles chart. True. So
how many windows was that record thrown through?
Well, you know, at my house, I actually flipped that thing over, and it, I don't know if anybody knows what was on the other side of that single. They're coming to
backwards.
Take me away. Yeah, it was backwards, and including the printing on the sticker that was on the album, it was backwards. The whole thing was backwards. I was so fascinated that, you know, it. Every once in a while, I would hear backwards recordings on the Beatle albums, and this just blew my mind, a whole song backwards. And I would learn how to sing it backwards, which would annoy my family to no end. So.
I'd like to hear some of that now.
He's my sweet Satan. Anyway.
I knew it.
And then a little Led Zeppelin there.
He was proud.
Yeah. So this left us with two songs, and at last vote, we've got 68 to 69. We took the two songs, the songs that you all voted for from side one, and all the songs you voted for from side two, and those two songs were Sweet Young Thing with 69 and Papa Jean's Blues with 68. So it is like neck and neck. So we put those two back up, and that's how the voting worked out. And Sweet Young Thing always seems to have one vote over. No matter how I've been watching this, as the voting keeps going up, it always seems like there's just that one extra vote for Sweet Young Thing.
Are you suggesting that there's a hanging Chad?
A hanging Chad, yes. Yeah. A hanging puppet Chad. Anyway. So, Nikki Locke wrote, "Seriously, this is an incredibly tough choice between these two. Some good clean teens would eat up Papa Jean's Blues, but also a teen like me would eat up Sweet Young Thing. I really dig those lyrics in the Oz. I love them both for different reasons. That being said, for the sake of what would make sense and target the age demographic, Papa Jean's Blues." Penny Innick says, "Papa Jean's Blues for the cool country sound and Mickey's wonderful harmony." Michelle Taylor says, "I chose Sweet Young Thing for the rock sound, but I love them both. Very tough choice." Phoenixville says, "It's got to be Papa Jean's Blues. Its lyrics flow like poetry. Its chord changes are spellbinding. Its melody is ultra catchy." I like that, ultra catchy, like Ultraman. "Plus, my 2-year-old son loves it. It can stop a toddler meltdown within the first bar, and for that alone, it should be the winner." Mary Angela Holmes writes, "Very tough choice, but Papa Jean's Blues." Patty Markle writes, "Papa Jean's Blues." And Amanda Dixon says, "I've always loved the stomping, almost perpetual motion of Sweet Young Thing and the lyrical sweet poetry of Papa Jean's Blues. So a difficult choice. I always thought the fiddle a bit overpowering in Sweet Young Thing at times. So Papa Jean's Blues is my winner. But despite how you feel, Sweet Young Thing always gets that one extra vote." And it's weird. Those two songs, I have a couple thoughts on them myself, is that... I remember when I'd be dating a girl in the early 80s, I had these cassettes that I made of, you know, recorded from the albums. And I would impress a lot of girls by being able to sing that song. Because they'd just look at me, it's like, you don't ever take a breath when you sing that. And that was always made for some fun. And the thing about Sweet Young Thing is it has that kind of whirling dervish kind of thing. It's almost like a happy version of Tomorrow Never Knows by the Beatles, where it's like one kind of thing played over and over again, but this is a very jubilant and happy song compared to the Tomorrow Never Knows. Any thoughts on the comparison of these two songs and whether either of them would have made a 45? Ghosty.
Well, I think the fact that you put on Sweet Young Thing on a mixtape that you gave to a girl and then sang along with it is probably why you've got the girl. See, I always put Queen songs on there, and it was just impossible for me to hit those notes.
Well, that and Fat Bottom Girl, what are you trying to tell her?
Yeah, that's true. I put Fat Bottom Girl track one. I thought of you. I follow that up with I Want to Break Free.
Well, there you go.
I love both of these songs. I love them. I can't see this as a single unless you were going to spin Mike Nesmith off into a solo career almost immediately. I just, for whatever reason, I can't. I love them, and I think they're great, but I can't see them as a single.
Jeff Geringer.
Yeah, I'm right with you. Just the climate of the times in 1966 didn't warrant itself to either one of these styles of recordings. If I had to tip my hat to one of them, it would be Papa Jean's Blues, because I think it has a great melody, It's even, to me, the only track that stands up on the Wichita Train Whistle Sings, you know, the avant-garde jazz album that Nez made where he covered his own songs.
Yep.
It still has a decent melody to it. And if there was some way he could have found a way to put the words Papa Jean's Blues, you know, in the title, in the actually bed of the song, it could have a life of its own, but it would have to be like 1968 if it was going to have a chance, because that's kind of when the Birds and things were really starting to pick up in that countryside. So in 1966, you know, I hate to go against the crowd, but yeah, it would be hard for either one to be a single.
Very good. One thing we can say about this, if any of these songs were missing, we would surely miss them. They're definitely part of this wonderful kaleidoscope of different sounds. And this is one of the amazing things about this album. It does not sound like, for example, there were bands that you bought. As much as I know you love the Beach Boys, if you bought a Beach Boys album prior to this time, you kind of knew what you were getting, right, Ghosty?
Sure, yeah.
And this really, there's so many different color sounds, if you will, and it does reflect the Hot 100 of the end of the year of 1966. There's a lot of these songs kind of reflect what was going on in the charts. Jeff, any thoughts on that?
Well, I'm one of those people that does not look at Don Kirshner as being the Antichrist to the Monkees. Uh-huh. I think he did a lot of really, really good work. I think he brought songwriters in that really fit the guys' voice tremendously. You know, David Gates, Neil Diamond, Goffin and King. The songs are so perfect to what the guy's style was. And, you know, I know he was crucified there when the Headquarters revolt hit. But I've always appreciated what Kirshner did to the Monkee sound and his production techniques. I mean, I think he did a great job.
I have really enjoyed monkeying around with you two guys today. You guys are both heroes of mine because you found a way to make a living running your mouth, and Ghosty's, you know, doing some occasional weird, goofy voices. And whereas I just do it on a podcast, you guys actually found a way to make a living. And I think that we can dedicate this show to a couple of things. First off, 60s radio, 70s radio and pop, and just all the great music that was back then. We're going to post a link to the top 100 songs of 1966. And just amazing music that makes you feel good. It's almost like the sun hitting your face, you know, on a nice summer's day. Right, guys?
Absolutely.
And we've lost some people in the entertainment world over this last month or so. Leonard Nimoy, June Alexander, Leslie Gore. And we also, as three guys who look up to radio, I'd like to have Jeff take this one away.
This is Jeff Gehringer. On behalf of the Zilt staff and Monkees fans around the world, we wanted to pay special tribute to the passing of legendary voiceover and disc jockey artist Gary Owens. Gary worked with the Monkees on Laugh-In. He worked with Davey as well. And he has announced Monkees Records for over 50 years. We'd like to pay special tribute to Gary and dedicate this episode to the memory and the passing of the great and my friend, Gary Owens.
Pick a song to be a 45, just in summation. Jeff Gehringer.
I Want to Be Free.
Okay, Ghosty Timmers.
I Want to Be Free, backed with Theme from the Monkees.
And Ghosty, what song does your alter ego, David Wills, vote for?
David Wills says he's too busy playing with his monkey pup.
Well, there you go. And aren't we all?
All right.
So we
this
encourage,
has turned into a creepy show.
We encourage everyone to play with your monkey puppets, or think back to those early days of yesteryear when you could turn on a transistor radio and hear Last Train to Clarksville for the first time. I had a blast, guys, and I'm sorry that it took so long for us to finally get this done, because what folks don't know is between our jobs, careers, or, you know, whatever we do to stay off the streets, this was a work to get it together, but it was worth it. And I look forward to doing this to more of the Monkees soon. So find the Lost 45 on More of the Monkees. So that sounds like fun, right?
You bet.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds great. And now that everybody knows the turmoil behind the scenes, there can be no criticism of this particular episode.
Right. And we all recorded this in a coffee shop, so if you hear any noises, that's what it is. So there we go.
Thanks a lot, Ken.
Yep. You guys ready to sing it out? Are you ready to sing it out?
Sure.
Okay.
Boom.
Here we go.
Walking down the street.
We get the funniest,
the funniest looks from
everyone
we meet. Hey, hey, we're the Monkees.
Wow.
We should have the opera ending. Here we come, walking down the street.
Have you ever heard the chant version of that?
The chant? There's a chant version?
Your chanting was real big in the late 80s, and Rhino came out with a record of chanting done to pop.
Oh, wow.
Let's play that now.
Here we come, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we
We'll see you on the next episode of Zilch. Thanks, guys. Say thanks back.
Or... Thanks, Ken.
Thanks, guys. I'm going to buy me a dog and a monkey's puppet. Don't ask. Don't tell. Let his fingers do the walking.
You just pull the string and it goes.
Where are you going, honey?
Going to buy me a dog.
Too much information.
Oh, good God.
Well, I had a wonderful time with you guys.
I did, too.
It was a lot of fun.
It was great, and I really do think the world of you, too.
Well, same back at you, Ken.
Back at you.
All right.
Yeah, thanks so much, Ken.
All right, God bless.
You, too. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
And that's our show. Zilch is an online, nonprofit Monkees audio fanzine made by fans for fans. Any samples of music or interviews heard remain property of their owners. We are not related to the Monkees or any of their members, past or present. We are not affiliated with Rhino or Ray Burke. If you hear anything you like from the band, go on Amazon or iTunes and buy it. If you enjoyed the show, like us on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm your announcer, Chelsea Epstein, saying always take some time to monkey around.
You know, the word oldies isn't a dirty word. Not in my book, anyway. Hey, this is Ghosty. How would you like to listen to a radio show that spins top hits, lost gems, and then some from the glorious years between 1955 and 1972? One that features interviews with the likes of Julie Newmar, John Sebastian, Al Jardine, Mickey Dolenz, Don Wells, David Cassidy, Angela Cartwright, Bill Medley, Ronnie Spector, Connie Stevens, and many more. Well, the Vintage Rockin' Pop Shop is on the air every Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on 89.1 WFDU-FM. That's in the New York, New Jersey area. You can also listen to it live online by going to WFDU.FM. But there's an even easier way for you folks who aren't in the New York, New Jersey area and don't want to have to get up at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on a Sunday morning. You can listen to it anytime you want just by clicking the handy links over on our Facebook page. So go on to Facebook. You're probably already on Facebook. Look for the Vintage Rockin' Pop Shop. Like it, live it, love it. And thanks.
Well, that's what we're trying to ascertain. I love that word. It sounds like something they'd put in a diet soda. Ascertain.
Ascertain.
Anyhow. All right.
It's 2,000 times sweeter than knowledge.
Yes, ascertain is 2,000 times sweeter than knowledge. There you go. Okay, well, at the other end of this, you're going to hear me make a complete fool out of myself, and I hope that you all enjoy it.
Can't wait for that.
Oh, you hear it all the time. Well, okay. True.